Good morning, everyone. It is September 24th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom, your home away from homeroom. It's certainly my home away from homeroom because I am the teacher in exile. I am your host here. My name is Frank. We're going to get into a news survey, news roundup here, and try to do some news that you do not see in other places. Got a big weekend coming up here, going out camping in the Adirondacks, going to see some fall color. It's raining out there right now. We had the bullfrog chorus going on out in the back lot, the backyard yesterday. Bunch of bullfrogs. Dog almost caught one, but she's such a good dog. She let that slimy critter go right out of her teeth, and he was fine, even after my wife gave him a little boost to get him on his way. He was just happy as a frog in rain. My dog's happy as a dog in rain, too. She's a Newfie, Newfoundland. She loves the water. Can't wait to get her up into the lake this weekend. So, let's start, as always, with the science fact of the day. Bye-bye, Miss American Fact. The fact today is Benford's Law. Benford's Law is a fascinating statistical phenomenon and observation, really, about the frequency of the leading digits, the starting digits in many real-world, everyday data sets like bank accounts or sports scores. And it says that about 30% of the leading digits in these data sets will be one. So you will see the number one as the first figure in these data sets, the first digit, many more times than is likely from just pure probability, right? Because if there are nine digits, then you would see it, you know, you wouldn't have zero as leading digits. So nine digits, then you'd see one is about 11% of the time by random. Just by random chance. However, real world data and data sets that span multiple orders of magnitude have the number one appearing 30% of the time as the leading digit rather than just 11%. The number two is also much more frequent than the other numbers besides number one. It appears maybe 17% of the time, somewhere in there. And it goes down from there. The other digits are less and less progressively likely to appear as the leading digit. This happens because of the distribution of figures. If you look at a log plot that goes across many orders of magnitude, you can see why this occurs. And it happens for every data set. You can see it for lengths of rivers. You can see it for sports scores, bank accounts. You can see it for building heights. As long as it spans a bunch of orders of magnitude. So if you're talking about an order of magnitude, that means a power of 10, right? 10, 10 to the 0, 10 to 1, 10 to the 2. These are the orders of magnitude, 10, 100, 1,000, things like that. Benford's Law is not just a good idea. It is a law, a statistical phenomenon that has been used in criminal trials, even in the United States. The IRS uses Benford's Law to look into your taxes and see if you're cheating. Because if you're just making up the data, chances are you are not wise enough to obey Benford's Law, although some people, of course, are. But so it's certainly not sufficient to cover all of the IRS's methods, but it is a tool in their arsenal to check for some amateurish number fraud going on there. You can also use it to help detect electoral fraud. A gentleman, a professor from the University of Michigan, the Wolverines, big game tomorrow against Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey. A gentleman from the University of Michigan famously used Benford's Law to analyze Iranian election results. And from about a decade and a half ago, 15 years ago, 2006, I believe, and he poked some holes in their election, and he called shenanigans on them. There was some controversy here. Other people say he maybe didn't apply Benford's Law just right. More recently, people have tried to use Benford's Law to attack the 2020 election results in the United States. However, all the people that I've seen who tried to use Benford's Law to analyze these forgot that, and Mabane himself, the professor from University of Michigan, pointed this out too in a paper. They forgot that the voting precincts in the United States are all about the same size. They're all roughly around 1,000 people. So in that case, you'd expect to see leading digits like 3, 4, 5, 6 more often than 1 or 2. So that was a non-starter there. And certainly, Benford's Law certainly did not prove any sort of fraud in the 2020 elections here in the United States. So that's your science fact of the day. Now let's go into some news, perhaps some news, at least to start off here, that you don't see in too many other places. This is what my wife has requested. So here we go. I continue to think that by not seeing in many other places, she means maybe some physics news. So here's a good one for you. If you haven't seen this, some physicists in the University of Glasgow have announced that they are developing holograms you can touch. Well, I am sad to report this isn't quite as cool as it sounds. These aerohaptics that they have are really just a version of an illusion. Even dating back, the methods of this illusion date back to the 19th century, and they admit this freely. The media sort of overhyped this. It's called Pepper's Ghost, and what you do is you have someone off stage, so to speak, because this was used on stage a lot for plays, and people wrote plays specifically to utilize this special effect because it was so popular back in the day. You have someone stand off stage, you light them up very brightly, you reflect their image from off stage onto a glass panel that is on stage, but of course the audience doesn't see the glass, they only see the image that is appearing in the glass, and it looks like a ghost. So these researchers from Boston University, these physicists, University of Glasgow, they have put this image into the air, into a place where you can see it, and to make you feel like you can touch it, they just shoot jets of air onto you. That's why they call it aerohaptics, aero for the air, haptic for the touch. And these jets of air that get projected onto your skin make you feel like you're touching the hologram. They say, and maybe it's true, that one of the great applications of this coming around the bend in the future will be to shake the hand of someone that you are meeting via Zoom or via Google Meet or Microsoft Teams, or somehow you're meeting virtually on the internet. You could actually shake their hand. With these aerohaptics, I guess your computer would need a giant air nozzle and some sort of pump to spray the air out at you, fan to spray the air out at you. I am not sure that this is ever going to fly. I question that is worth the effort, but maybe they'll be able to miniaturize it and make it fly. We have had, by the way, 3D holograms for a long time. We have been able to project an image into space and have it appear there. There can even be noise there associated with it. And we've been able to have this for at least 20 years. I was fortunate enough right around the year 2000 to visit the lab on Long Island of Eugene Dolgoff. Eugene Dolgoff invented the technology that is used in most of the new projectors that are used for smart boards and used to display your laptop screens during a presentation with PowerPoint, something like that. Those projectors use technology that Gene Dolgoff developed. And when we were in Gene Dolgoff's lab, he showed us plenty of holograms that appeared right in front of us, floating in space. He was trying to sell them at the time to big corporations to use for advertising. One of the ones that we saw put the Coke logo floating in the air right in front of us. And you could see the machine that was projecting it. It wasn't like you could not find the source of it. But it turns out that other people have been able to project these plasma holograms from so far away that you couldn't find the source of it. In fact, a lot of people think that what's behind the recent spate of UFO sightings is actually just plasma holograms. These plasma holograms being projected from great distances, perhaps even from satellites, by another state actor, maybe China, maybe Russia, maybe a different branch of the United States. Of course, they all deny it, and of course, many people have come out and said, many credible people have come out and said, oh, this can't be our technology, right? Senators like Mitt Romney have said it can't be our technology. Other people have said it can't be our technology or a foreign technology. I'm not so sure what the most likely explanation is, but certainly projected plasmas from a great distance are a possibility. Might not even be a state actor because this technology is not super far beyond us. As I said, 20 years ago, just in Gene Dolgoff's lab, and he was pretty much the only guy who worked there. He was kind of a tinkerer, just wandering around this cavernous warehouse every day, inventing awesome things. Really cool to see. So it might just be a single actor doing that. Next news item is in Boston University, and this result was actually published in Physical Review Letters, PRL, which is the ne plus ultra of physics journals. I guess Nature and Science would still rank a little bit higher in prestige, but PRL, strictly within the physics world, is the peak of the summit. So if you see something in PRL, it's a nice heuristic. You know that at least it is important to other physicists. And this is an interesting development that has come out now in PRL. New paper here. And it is this idea is from Chris Lauman and his fellow terriers down in Boston at Boston University. And at BU, they've developed a new theoretical substance. They have not created it in real life yet, but they have certainly modeled it, and it is called quantum spin ice. There's that Newfoundland barking over there. And in quantum spin ice, you have quasi-particles. They're not what we would call real particles, but they act like it. And the way that these quasi-particles interact basically amounts to an alternate standard model. The standard model of physics describes all our different rules, right? The rules for gravity, the rules for the strong force, the weak force, the electromagnetic force, and all the particles that carry the force and all the particles that the force acts on. So all the four different forces. So in a quantum spin ice, you have these particles obeying different rules, or I should say the same rules, but with different strengths, different constants. And they've been able to show that you could get the fine structure constant, which determines the coupling strength in the of the electromagnetic force. They've been able to get it down to 1/10. This is obviously a huge change. And in some sense, it allows a glimpse into an alternate universe. For example, if the fine structure constant in our universe were 1/10 instead of 1/137, then the periodic table would only have about 10 elements, only go up to about neon or so. You wouldn't have iron, you wouldn't have gold, you wouldn't have mercury, you wouldn't have xenon, anything heavier than 10 protons in its nucleus. So that's interesting, and we will see what will come of that. But it's also interesting to note that this is important for physicists, because why is the fine structure constant 1/137 in our universe? No idea. This puzzles many, many, many physicists. They constantly struggle with this. Why should the fine structure constant be 1/137? Or any of the physical constants, right? They question why they should have their values. the fact that life is only as we know it is only compatible with a very narrow range of these values only confounds them further, or perplexes them further. Well, maybe by studying quantum spin ice, they'll get a little bit more insight into the origins of these physical constants. I still think it could be just random chance. But a lot of people do not like that explanation at all. They say there's no way that such fundamental constants could come from random chance. They say that we can't be satisfied with that explanation. There must be an underlying reason. We will see. Next news item, Evergrande over in China. I just want to point out that Evergrande, yesterday they didn't pay back their $80 million, which was due. And people are fearing a ripple effect all across the financial world because of this. Stocks were down for a while in the United States, and China fears that they could have a bit of a financial crisis or a big financial crisis on their hands if Evergrande collapses. They have a 30-day grace period now to see if they're actually going to pay this back or not. A lot of people expect Chinese state, the CCP, the Communist Party of China, to intervene here and to bail them out. I think there's a good chance they won't, and I just want to point out that if they don't, that as if it already weren't apparent, that firmly makes China more economically capitalist, more economically free than the United States, right? Because in 2008, the United States had these massive bailouts for General Motors, for example, and they used other taxpayers' dollars to prop up these companies. They forced other taxpayers to support these companies that were failing. And by the laws of the free market, should have failed. That's not free, right? When you see somebody else's money and distribute it to somebody else, it is not free. And China, I think there's a chance that they are not going to bail out Evergrande. We'll see. We'll check back in a month and see if China does or does not bail out Evergrande. Maybe they'll nationalize it. But it's notable, and I don't see too many people talking about it, that if China does let Evergrande fail, that would be significantly more free, more economically free, more free market than the United States has been in at least 13 years since 2008. And if ever there was a company that deserved to fail, by the way, it's General Motors, right? I grew up in Michigan. I grew up reading the Detroit News every day in the late 70s, into the 80s, into the 90s. And if there was ever a more arrogant, sclerotic, lazy and coercive corporation than GM, I'm not sure what it was. Maybe U.S. soccer, maybe FIFA or the NCAA or something like that. But those are quasi-public. They're not the same sort of entity that General Motors is. General Motors was called too big to fail. But no, if you're failing, you can't really be, you're not too big to fail. You're too big to keep alive. You're hurting way, way, way too many people if you're that big and you're failing. So you're too big to keep alive. Anything that's that big and that bad, you need to let it die. Handouts are for emergencies only and for the truly, truly incapable of supporting themselves. And when you're doing a handout, you should not do it by force either. That is wrong. They're certainly not for multi-billion dollar international corporations that should have failed. So we'll see if China comes out ahead of the United States on this economic freedom scale. Of course, politically, they're far less free than the United States. Number four on our news rundown here is, of course, the France outrage over the United States, Australia, and United Kingdom submarine deal. Great line here for Boris Johnson. He said to France, he said, donnez-moi un break. Donnez-moi un break. That's a good one, Bojo. I like that. So the point that I want to make here is that if the United States is really selling super secret sub technology to a dictatorship like Australia, the United States should think twice, right? Because Australia is extremely unfree right now. Australia is a complete tyranny, complete dictatorship. They make Pinochet look like Mary Poppins down there. this is not a pleasant place. It is a prison society. And I'm not sure that sharing super secret sub technology with them is the best idea. Also, super secret sub technology, SSN, you're going SSN, sounds like going Super Saiyan, so that's pretty cool. Next, number five, Haitians being sent back to Haiti by the United States, deported. And the point here is just that Biden is Trump, right? Biden has become Trump. He's deported people just like Trump, roughly the same numbers as Trump, roughly to the same places as Trump. He has hardly been a champion of open borders. Not sure if you saw it, but the U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti resigned in protest, wrote a scathing letter. And just 3 points about that and about the situation as a whole. Number one, United States, of course, founded on migration, immigration, and we should continue with that. If you are going to say that the problem is that immigrants only come here for welfare and for benefits, then you know what? Fix the problem with welfare and benefits. Do not try to limit migration. That is a second wrong. Two wrongs do not make a right. You should not commit a second wrong just because you can't address or you won't address the first wrong properly. This is the old NCAA rule, right? Remember, NCAA used to suspend Cleveland State every time Ohio State did something bad. Every time Ohio State committed some infraction, NCAA couldn't risk the Ohio State market or go after Ohio State. So then the hammer dropped on Cleveland State. This is a bad way to conduct your organization and a bad way to try to maintain the rule of law or the rule of order. Number two about this situation in immigration here is every time you see the Republicans and Democrats becoming more and more similar, like we are in immigration, right? They might talk a different game, but in their actions, Trump and Biden are doing the same thing. Every time you see this, you have to wonder about Girard, right? Rene Girard, great 20th century philosopher, and his ideas of mimetic rivalry. The two are becoming each other. Is there a scapegoat about to come in the future? A sacrificial victim that will allow these people to move past this mimetic crisis? I do not know. Or these two groups in the case of Democrats and Republicans? I do not know, but I hope that we can avoid this. And number three, last point here is every time you see the Republicans and the Democrats acting similarly like this, you also have to wonder how much of this in these two purportedly different groups, these two groups that claim to be different, if they really are different, but they're acting in the same way, perhaps this is evolutionary circuitry in the brain, a la Tubi and Cosmides, that is at work here, right? Some tabula not at all rasa instinct that we all have in common, thinking fast and heuristically, instead of thinking slowly and rigorously. Remember, at least in my opinion, I strongly believe that psychology is vastly, almost completely underrated in politics at both the micro and the macro level. We need more applied psychology in politics. Number six on the news rundown for today, Clinton lawyer Michael Sussman indicted by special counsel John Durham for lying. What happened here, of course, is in a 2016 interview with the FBI, Sussman said, oh, yes. So, yes, I did turn over to the FBI and to all the spy agencies this big trove of information that claimed that Trump was colluding with Russia. And I did say to all the spy agencies, alert, alert, red alert, flashing lights, you need to investigate Trump and Russia because they're working together and they're trying to interfere with the United States election, and it is bad wrong, okay? And Sussman said, yes, I did do that in 2016, and yes, in 2016, I said in the interview, I said that I was not representing any particular client when I went to the FBI and gave them all this Trump-Russia collusion information that turned out to be all made up, but But yes, I said I was not working for any client. And John Durham now, special counsel John Durham, is saying, ooh, yeah, you said you weren't working for any client, but it turns out you were actually working directly for Hillary Clinton and for her campaign. And so you are in trouble, as Tootie would say, trouble. Mr. Sussman, you are going down. Perhaps, it's only alleged at this time that he has committed a felony here. We will see, as always, but let's be honest here. It does not look good for Clinton. It looks like she is a dirty, cutthroat criminal. It looks like she paid these lawyers to make up lies, to fabricate stories about Trump and Russia, and then she amplified her message on Twitter, which eventually, of course, she got Twitter to shut down the opposite side of the message, to censor the other side of the message if a private company can censor things. Personally, I think Twitter should be able to do whatever the heck they want. They are a private company. But she did get Twitter to shut down all discussion on the other side of this issue. She had her friends in the media publish the lie, and she accused Trump of trying to influence the election unfairly when, in fact, she herself was attempting to influence the election via fraud at the exact time she was accusing, successfully, really, because it did smear Trump painfully, she accused Trump of doing this, although I guess she did lose the election. So, and she, worst of all, she used the intelligence agencies of the United States to do this, and they went along with it and allowed themselves to be used. This is disgusting. In my opinion, the FBI should pretty much be dissolved based on this, or at least undergo complete structural reform. It needs to be gutted. An intelligence agency simply cannot be allowed to use its power to tilt an election like this. None of this is surprising, of course, this indictment. Maybe the only surprising piece is that it actually happened, but you have very strong parallels here to the case with Hunter Biden's laptop, right? And then you had the people representing the United States intelligence establishment like John Brennan and James Clapper coming out immediately and suppressing and censoring the Hunter Biden laptop story in 2020, right before the election. And this time they were successful in winning the election for their side. And they came out and they said, oh, this has all the hallmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign. Glenn Greenwald does a fantastic job of it over on Rumble. Go watch his system update report. And it's true. The intelligence agencies of the United States worked very, very hard to suppress the information about Hunter Biden's laptop, social media, the big titans of social media, Facebook and Twitter, absolutely killed this story. They came out and said it was Russian disinformation. They made everybody think that there was nothing to these allegations, when in fact it was obvious right from the start that the Hunter Biden laptop was probably accurate. It was accurate. It was truthful. And what they're doing is they're making up this accusation against Trump, and then they are using that he is unduly influencing the election, and then they are using the United States intelligence apparatus to influence the election themselves. They are committing the same acts exactly that they are accusing Trump or the other side of committing. It's terrible. Needs to stop. Number 7 on the news items here. Tegnell in Sweden. Anders Tegnell is the Tony Fauci of Sweden. He's taken a victory lap, right? If you've looked at the data, Sweden hardly has any third wave at all going on over there. And he said, yeah, a long time ago, a year ago, I said, we're just going to have to live with this disease. We cannot eradicate it. I'm quoting him now. We have to accept a certain level of spread in the society. We have to accept that there's going to be a few cases in the hospital. COVID-19 in the foreseeable future, just like we accept a few cases of flu or a few cases of many diseases that we cannot control completely. And to that, I say a big yep. Yep, that is for sure true. We are going to have to live with it. We are going to have to get on with our lives. As Eep from The Crood says, there's more to life than just not dying. You have to have value in your life. You have to give meaning to your day. You need to get up and work, even with this disease all around us. Number 8, last one on the list for today, Nick Pope on Twitter, talking about the 90-day follow-up to the Office of Director of National Intelligence UFO report. Nick Pope, of course, was in charge of the UK's UFO program. And Nick Pope was talking to some people in ODNI, the ODNI, and he asked them, hey guys, you know, in June, you said that in 90 days there would be a follow-up to this big report that you just issued on UFOs, where you said, yes, UFOs are real. There are things out there that we don't know what they are. And you kind of hinted at the fact that you really don't think there are any technology from us or from our peer nations. So what about this 90 days? It's kind of up right around now. How about giving us a little bit more of a tidbit here? And of course, the response from ODNI was, sorry, we didn't say that that follow-up report would be public or not, and we're not going to comment on whether or not it's going to be public, but we will say, yes, we are continuing to follow up within 90 days as we promised. So it doesn't look like we're going to get too much valuable information there. Keep your ears open. Leaks are happening all the time. We have people like Avi Loeb at Harvard now lending legitimacy to ufology, to the study of UFOs, and we should probably do a big investigation on UFOs here, devote a half an hour to a podcast on UFOs here sometime. Let me know if you would like to hear about that. As always, give me your feedback and hit that subscribe button on Spotify, on Apple, on Google. We will keep coming your way. I will keep coming your way every morning. For now, go and listen to the other half of the podcast. Now, the other file that I'm posting this morning, talking about some storytelling techniques, whether you're in the classroom, whether you're a public speaker, some things that I have learned, that I have developed, and some stories that I found that work really well over my 25 years in the classroom. So go check that out, hit that subscribe button, and have a super weekend. Take care.